I really love connecting to kids because they'll see me performing and not being like self-conscious in my body and taking command and being in charge and being fabulous and like acting like a silly diva sometimes, like, you know, just being like my general funny, like out there self. And you don't always get that from anywhere. Like, it's hard. It's, you don't always get to hear Beth Ditto when you're 8. We try and correct that. That's what Girls Rock Camp's for.
This is Femme Radio, a production of CJRU's Feminist Radio Collective.
Welcome to Femme Radio on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. I'm your host, Emily Dravesky, and with me today are my co-hosts, Stacey Copeland and Samantha LaPierre.
Hello.
Hello.
Samantha, start with you.
I'm a little saucy. I'm good. How are you doing?
Very saucy today.
I know.
It's going to be a good show.
I think so.
What do you do in life and in radio?
In life, I'm a writer and an editor. And a saucy writer and editor. In radio, I am equally as saucy, and I like to volunteer with Femme Radio. I am still learning the ropes here, but I think I'm doing okay.
I think you are, yeah. You've done quite a few interviews for us.
Yes.
Most recently, League of Lady Wrestlers.
Yes, we got to talk about women in wrestling, which is my favorite thing to talk about. Yeah, it was a really good show, and I got to geek out, so that's like my favorite thing to do in the world.
Yeah, good stuff.
Thank you.
Stacey, what do you do in life and in radio?
Well, speaking of saucy, I just ordered a bunch of pizza for tomorrow. For my last class, my last teaching gig here at Ryerson.
Yay!
Before I fly the coop, so... Looking forward to that. Looking forward to eating a ton of pizza with my students and listening to their final projects. But otherwise, I'm good. Life's good. Got my pink sweater on.
She sure does.
You are like the cool teacher with like your pink
yes.
sweater.
It's really just
a pizza party.
It's just bribing them to come to the last class
yeah,
with pizza.
That's really it.
That's fair.
Fair enough. This week on Femme Radio, CJRU contributor Mira Govindasamy chats with Kriti Uranowski, a Toronto-based musician and volunteer mentor with the super rad Toronto organization Girls Rock Camp. We'll also have some things we're digging this week and some local Toronto events we think you should be checking out. But first, we've got our Canadian feminist news headlines.
Anti-choice ads are now appearing on 2 public transit buses in Peterborough, Ontario. A national anti-choice group called the Canadian Centre for Bioethical Reform, or the CCRB, is responsible for placing the ads. The ads are said to remain on the transit buses for 3 months, yet citizens are being urged to complain to the Advertising Standards Canada Council by Mariam Monsef, the MP for Peterborough Kawartha, and the Minister of the Status of Women. Monsef wrote in a public Facebook post that she would prefer not to see the ads in the public space, but the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms ensures that all Canadians have the right to free speech, peaceful protest, and freedom of assembly. Monsef pointed out that unless the ads broke the law, the CCRB is entitled to those protections.
Halifax's poet laureate, 31-year-old Mi'kmaq poet Rebecca Thomas, is being lauded as a catalyst for change in her city. Thomas went before Halifax Council with a poem chiding councillors for shutting down debate last year over how the city commemorates its controversial founder, Edward Cornwallis. Thomas was named Poet Laureate not long before Halifax Council last May narrowly rejected a motion to review public sites honouring Cornwallis, the Nova Scotia governor who founded Halifax in 1749 and soon after issued a bounty on Mi'kmaq scalps in response to an attack on colonists. Last Tuesday, Mi'kmaq addressed her poem to the city councillors who voted down the motion, several of whom had cited fears about reopening old wounds and denigrating Halifax's history. In the poem, she asks, quote, How can granting us our humanity be any less of a priority than making the donair the official meal of Halifax City? Moved by Thomas's poem about the issue, a Halifax City councillor decided council needed to revisit the issue sooner rather than later and called to reopen the debate at the next meeting. Thomas began writing 4 years ago at the encouragement of a colleague, and her bold voice and sharp wit soon caught the attention of Halifax's then poet laureate, L. Jones, who helped recommend Thomas as her successor.
Seven alumni from one of Ontario's largest Christian summer camps are fighting to end anti-gay policy that requires staff to condemn homosexual and lesbian sexual conduct. Volunteer and paid staff at the non-denominational Evangelical Ontario Pioneer Camp in Port Sydney, Ontario, are required to sign a code of conduct that states homosexual and lesbian sexual conducts are not to be practiced, and staff should not in any way espouse, endorse, or imply acceptance of what the policy says should be avoided. Michelle Dowling, a former camper and staff member, started One Pioneer, the group pushing for LGBT inclusion in the camp. Dowling admits that the policy held her back from accepting her own sexuality when she last signed the contract in 2011. Dowling submitted 45 personal stories from former campers and staff about their experiences dealing with LGBT issues at the camp to its organizer, InterVarsity Fellowship of Canada, in early 2016. However, InterVarsity has concluded that it will continue to affirm anti-LGBT stance, but its leadership and training has been redesigned to, end quote, have a significant unit where people can enter into discussions about their sexuality and wrestle with their convictions. Dowling hopes that One Pioneer will keep the conversation about the inclusivity in the camp going.
Pakistani activist and Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai has been bestowed honorary Canadian citizenship. Yousafzai was greeted at Parliament Hill in Ottawa by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as well as a parade of dignitaries, cabinet ministers, and diplomats inside the rotunda beneath the Peace Tower. On Wednesday, April 12th, Trudeau presented her with a certificate documenting her as an honorary Canadian. She is only the sixth person to receive the honor and the youngest ever. Trudeau also presented her with the Canadian flag from atop the tower. The now 19-year-old Yousafzai, known to all simply as Malala, visited Ottawa to receive this honorary citizenship from the federal government as an acknowledgement of her tireless work in the name of girls' education. She also addressed MPs and senators in a joint session of Parliament, becoming the youngest person ever to do so. The day comes more than 2 years after an initial plan to honor Yousafzai was interrupted by a gunman who took the life of a Canadian soldier and stormed Parliament Hill before dying in a hail of gunfire. Yousafzai surprised a group of students at an Ottawa high school earlier in the day on April 12th, where she was introduced to cheers by Sophie Gregoire Trudeau. The groundwork to make the now 19-year-old an honorary citizen began several months after she was shot by Taliban militants in Pakistan in the fall of 2012. The honor was part of a political initiative tied into the Conservatives' foreign aid focus on maternal, newborn, and child health, according to Rachel Curran, Stephen Harper's former director of policy. Malala joins only five other honorary Canadian citizens, including the Dalai Lama, the Aga Khan, Nelson Mandela, Burmese activist Aung San Suu Kyi, and Swedish diplomat Raoul Wallenberg.
Indigenous activist Maggie Sywink will act as Ontario's special advisor between the province and the families as the historic national inquiry begins. Sywink, who's from Whitefish River First Nations on Manitoulin Island, has relentlessly campaigned to call attention to murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls, including her own sister, Sonia. Sywink has spent the last several months trying to find and contact as many Ontario families as she can to let them know that she is the bridge between them and the province and all its departments and agencies. The National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls gets set to start on May 29th in Whitehorse, Yukon. As the National Inquiry struggles to overcome logistical issues and ensures it has proper counseling and health supports in place before the hearings begin, Ontario says it is ready to go. Ontario has set up and opened its Family Information Liaison Unit office, which intends to provide families and survivors with support. The unit will also act as a bridge to government agencies, including police, child welfare, and the provincial coroner. The FILU is headquartered here in Toronto, but there are 3 field offices, one each at Shikagamit Kwe Health Center in Sudbury, Anishinaabe Mishkiki in Thunder Bay, and Equewuk Women's Group in Sioux Lookout. One of the biggest complaints families have is that when they have questions, they don't know who to contact inside the vast government bureaucracy. Cywink says her role as special advisor helps her own healing journey as she deals with her sister's death. Cywink said in an interview with the Toronto Star, quote, "This is a passion. It's not just a job for me. I want to keep the needs of the families in the forefront of my mind. They must walk ahead of me and I must follow their lead."
Health Minister Jane Philpott says Ottawa will pay for someone to travel with Indigenous women who need to leave their communities to give birth, a change to what she calls an extremely unhelpful policy. In an interview with the Canadian Press, Philpott said she heard a cry loud and clear from Indigenous health experts who were urging the federal government to allow pregnant First Nations women to leave home with a travel companion. Indigenous women without proof of a medical need to have someone escort them have long been forced to have their children alone and far from their land, language, and heritage, the minister continued. Philpott said Northern Manitoba doctors told her of women who were so terrified to travel alone that they would hide to avoid having their pregnancies discovered, only to present themselves at the last minute in communities ill-prepared for delivery. Too often, the cries heard in First Nations communities were cries of death, not birth, she added. Quote, "That set me on a path to be able to return the cries of birth in communities as much as possible," she said, noting a recent $83 million budget investment for maternal and child health for First Nation and Inuit. She also noted the need to transform the delivery of health in communities, saying a number of indicators clearly showed considerable gaps between health incomes of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. Philpott said recommendations from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which spent 6 years studying Canada's residential schools, including acknowledging the state of Indigenous health and the fact it's the result of decades of ill-informed government policies. This announcement from Philpott comes just a few months after the Ontario government announced their commitment of $2 million to support Aboriginal midwives in 6 communities across the province. Minister of Health and Long-Term Care Eric Hoskins announced the initiative February 10th during a visit to a family health clinic at the Fort William First Nation. "It is shocking to think that in 2017, we are still having to push the government to provide sufficient birthing options and basic care for women and pregnancy, but these 2 announcements are certainly a step in the right direction."
Toronto is getting a new music festival this September featuring a lineup and staff made up of all women, trans, and genderqueer people. Local musician Aaron Fogle hopes to follow in the footsteps of Lilith Fair and Ladyfest by launching Toronto's own Venus Fest. The idea for the festival came in part from the positive experience Fogle has had putting together an all-woman-identified show with her band, Queen of Swords, of which Kriti Yaranowski, our interview today, is also associated. Fogle is committed to diversity in Venus Fest's organizing staff, and the festival's lineup is being curated with careful consideration to racial and gender representation, as well as age. Applications for roles in the festival will be posted on the website and social media as they become available. Fogle invites those who are interested in participating, especially women, genderqueer people, and trans people, to reach out through social media or email. Stacey, you brought in our artist spotlight today. Take it away.
In this week's Artist Spotlight, we have Canadian folk singer-songwriter Amelia Curran. Curran's latest album, Watershed, released March 2017, carries the most direct message of any of her releases to date. Put in their own terms, it boils down to coming together and getting over yourselves already. Watershed, Curran's 8th studio album, gets a bit more specific than that, moment by moment, addressing frustration with the systemic disadvantages in the music industry that Curran describes as an intimidating and icky model, where sexism still persists. The album also addresses frustrations that have arisen in Curran as an activist fighting for better institutional treatment of and better attitudes toward mental illness. And Curran doesn't just talk the talk when it comes to activism. She backs up her words with concrete action. 2 years ago, she and three friends established the organization It's Mental, aimed at lobbying governments for better mental health services, also drawing the attention of people who need them. Off of their brand new album, Watershed, here is Amelia Crin with No More Quiet.
I have been around this corner. I have seen this road before. It keeps rolling along, rolling me over. I have lived within these borders. I was not bad for a girl, but it keeps knocking me down, knocking me over. I have heard the conversation. I have seen the whistle blow, and we keep rolling along, rolling me over. But I built this bridge with my own.
That was Amelia Crin with No More Quiet. For more music by Crin and upcoming tour dates, head over to ameliacrin.com.
Kriti Yaranowski is a Toronto-based musician who performs in a number of bands, including Lavender Bruisers, Queen of Swords, and Dorothea Pass. Additionally, she is a private music teacher as well as a volunteer with the organization Girls Rock Camp. Girls Rock Camp Toronto is a volunteer-driven nonprofit organization aiming to build the self-esteem of girls through music creation. Femme Radio's Mira Govindasamy sat down with Kriti to discuss Girls Rock Camp, fat shaming, self-esteem, racial diversity, and the successful Girls Rock Camp alumni band, Hex. Kriti also shares some of her tricks for convincing kids to broaden their musical interests beyond Taylor Swift.
Welcome to the program, Kriti.
Hi.
So, you're here today. We want to talk to you about Girls Rock Camp and your role there and what goes on there, what kind of interesting feminist things happen there.
Sure, lots of interesting feminist things happen there for sure.
So, maybe to get started, you can talk a little bit about how you got involved and what a day in the life at camp is like.
Sure. Well, I got involved in 2010 when the co-founders, Lish Haugen and Magalie Mayer, they got together and decided they wanted to start a Toronto branch of the Girls Rock Camp Alliance, which is a group of camps across the world who all promote similar values in teaching music and young women and non-gender-conforming kids how to play rock and roll. Yeah, so when they were starting the camp, I had done a lot of musical theater camps and acting camps, dance camps, things like that. I had taught at a lot of those, so I kind of helped them with organizing the day. And there's a team of organizers who bring a lot to the table. My duties are mainly instrument instructor and band coach. Every morning at Girls Rock Camp, the girls are split into instrument classes. So there are guitar, bass, drums, and keyboards, which I teach often. There are some other excellent teachers who come and go from teaching the different instruments too. And they're all different skill levels, so it's a little bit difficult sometimes at the beginning to get a hang of teaching Girls Rock Camp style, because you're working with kids who have played an instrument like since they were quite young, or kids who have never ever got to try an instrument before, or maybe even kids who wanted to play a different instrument but that instrument was full, so they got switched to a different one, so they're not 100% pleased. But anyhow, so there's a few hours every morning of instrument instruction. It's kind of like a crash course to not only musical theory, but also playing in a band, which is very different from learning like Royal Conservatory, which is generally the type of lessons that kids get access to here in Ontario, at least.
How is it different?
it doesn't sit well with a lot of people. It doesn't suit a lot of kids' style, especially if a kid is into rock and roll. If a kid is into rock and roll or just into weird stuff or just wants to be on stage and, like, there's just so many different ways of learning, obviously. But music often is seen as like a, this is the way and this is the way you'll do it and you'll learn theory along with practice. And a lot of people have a real difficult time connecting the usefulness of the theory to their playing. I know I certainly did when I was a young performer and all through college when I was studying music and theater performance. I had a real difficult time with the theoretical concepts. And I struggled a lot through it. So I understand that in the kids, but that's not the only way to teach, right? Like, lots of people play by ear, and that's completely valid. I know plenty of excellent musicians who have never learned to read a staff in their life. Like, it's not quite as cut and dry. I mean, art isn't as cut and dry, of course. But anyhow, so we do instrument instruction is quite interesting. It's not just practicing scales and arpeggios, but it is also, we do some scales and arpeggios because they are useful. And then the morning will usually be broken up with like a snack break. And then at lunchtime, different Toronto bands come in and play for the kids while they eat lunch. And we usually have a vegan lunch program that's made for the kids that's really delicious and yummy. In the afternoon, they'll do a workshop. It's good. I find it really good to break up the day from just instruments and music and playing and the goal of the show to like add in the workshop. Times are really great for things like media consumption and like media messages. And we do workshops on body image and fat positivity. And we do workshops on pronouns. And once we had a really excellent workshop and they rewrote Taylor Swift's You Belong to Me to make it gender You Belong to Me, which is pretty dope. Over the years, the workshops have gotten really great. A lot of the facilitators do really interesting things with visuals. We find cats get kids' attention a lot, especially when we're doing things like explaining the safety rules, etc. In the morning at Girls Rock Camp, the kids themselves make agreements, which are the rules of conduct for the camp. So they all input their ideas. We have a wonderful counseling team. Like, we have like camp counselors, and which are instructors and band coaches, but we also have like counselors who are there to support the kids emotionally. So one of our counselors will be there and they'll make the rules up themselves, and then we'll make a cool printout of it, you know, with some unicorns and some sparkles, and we'll put them everywhere in the venue that we're using for the camp, so the kids can touch base with that. And when their behavior isn't reflecting the agreements they made, we can always look at that and say, well, this is what we agreed would be the correct way that everyone could leave this situation feeling good. That's, I find, a really key part to rock camp.
You're kind of getting into something I was going to ask you about anyway, which is about kind of the intention of feminism behind it. And you're talking about how Girls Rock Camp is driven by values. And I'm wondering if that is a specific value that's there, or if it's kind of implicit in other values that exist.
For sure. I know we're a bit spoiled here in Toronto. Often, since we began camp, like, the kind of parents that are really gung-ho to send their kids to Girls Rock Camp often are in the left-wing feminist mindset and are really... the kids know about feminism, like, you know, you've got eight-year-olds who can school anybody on pronouns. You've got kids who are really aware of intersectional feminism at a very young age. And then you'll often have kids who are coming from a different background and not from a music camp. So it's who are coming just for the specific purpose of a music camp, who aren't as much embedded in the values of feminism in their day-to-day lives. And then they get to learn about that, right? Again, they make the rules themselves and we make them all together. So the goal is to focus on us having a good time and us feeling like we're rocking, whatever that means to us inside. It's not about being like so fabulous, unless you want it to be. It's not about being 100% on pitch, unless that's your goal, and go for it. And even if you don't get every single note right, like, you wrote a song in a week. And that's amazing. That's really cool and impressive. And, like, you rock.
Yes, you mentioned also that there's like, I mean, there's kids there who already understand intersectional feminism. I'm kind of wondering what kind of demographics of kids are coming in.
So I know that Lucian Magley, who and the organizing team, which I'm not a part of the direct organizing team, I'm more of a hands-on instructional team, but there's a organizing committee and a submissions committee and the two co-founders. And I know that it's very painstaking for them every single year to go through everything kind of with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that we are being as inclusive as possible, making sure that we correct any mistakes we've made in the past, that we're aware of things like the awareness of the women that run this camp and that work at this camp is so amazing. And it's like really changed my life because I definitely did not know about a lot of aspects of intersectional feminism. I mean, it's common sense, but I never directly thought about it because it never directly affected me. But learning about it the same way the kids do has really like just made me, it just changed my life entirely.
Maybe because everyone should be learning about intersectional feminism from like a child's perspective. And yeah, as simply as a child would learn it.
The main thing I find is the women and people who are there, who are being represented in the staff, is very important. We have a wide group of lots of different women who volunteer every year, but I'm a cisgendered white woman. And I have really extensive musical experience, which is super helpful to camp. And I'm always there to volunteer as much as I can. But if there is perhaps like a instructor of a different color or an instructor of a different sexuality or of a different gender identity, it would be beneficial and it would behoove those kids to experience that.
It could also like resonate specifically with one of the campers or a participant. You know, seeing someone like a person of color instructing them in music, it might mm-hmm. be like, oh, that's me. And I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, across the board. I mean, I don't know society's position on like fat phobia and things like that, but I know for sure that I have connected with, I've been a lot of different sizes, I'm a bigger person, but I really do love to connect with bigger kids. It's not something we even discuss. It's still something that's tough for kids to discuss or feel good about, which is why I love the body positivity workshops and like learning about fat phobia and things like that as well. But I really love connecting to kids because they'll see me performing and not being like self-conscious in my body and taking command and being in charge and being fabulous and like acting like a silly diva sometimes. Like, you know, just being like my general funny, like out there self. And you don't always get that from anywhere. Like it's hard. Like it's, you don't always get to hear Beth Ditto when you're 8. We try and correct that. That's what Girls Rock Camp's for. But you don't always get to, and it goes across the board, you don't always see yourself represented. The more representation we have, the better. And so, yeah, if I need to like step aside once for one camp session, I'm totally fine.
What do you think the impact of a program like this could have been for you if you'd had access to it?
The reason I think that I pursued performing was because I did have a really supportive, my dance teacher was incredibly supportive. Her name is Janice Lynn, and she ran a dance school in Whitby for like a long time.
And now, shout out to Janice Lynn.
Janice Lynn School of Dance. What? It's she's it's gone now. It's a different studio. And she goes around Canada and the world adjudicating tap dancing competitions because she's fabulous. And I love her. I sang at her wedding, like, she's incredible. And so strong. She actually comes for singing lessons sometimes. But she never once ever in my life said anything about my body, ever. And I did ballet. I did all my exams. I did tap, ballet, jazz, like musical theater. I started teaching when I was 15. And I was in good shape. I just was always a bigger person. And then I had a pretty bad eating disorder sort of in the late teens, early 20s, where I was like quite thin. And a lot of people like cheered me on. She still didn't really say much about, nobody said much about like about it at the studio. It was just like, you know, that's how it is. I was basically told by a lot of other teachers though, especially in like school, music teachers, other kids who are like pursuing the arts, like, well, you're fat and you don't like have like a conventionally pretty face. Like you're never gonna, it's gonna be really hard for you. Like it's never really gonna work out. And that was just the attitude, like, across the board. And even people who are trying to be, like, quote unquote, more realistic with me would be like, because you're 5'11", you're not, like, that fat girl. And I'm like, well, like, I'm not, like, I'm my own thing. Like, again, with the representation, I never saw, obviously, anyone who looked like me. The quote unquote, like, fat girls were, like, characters like a Ricky Lake or a Marissa Jarrett Winokur from Hairspray, who were, like, short and chubby and cutie pies. And, like, I mean, I'm a cutie pie, but I'm, like, really tall. And, like, I'm also, like, a fierce dancer and singer and, like, multi-instrumentalist and do a bunch of other shit. So it's just, like, people would just be like, we don't know what to do with you. Girls Rock Camp, really, working there while also doing my own musical projects as my own artist and still working occasionally in the theater world, has just opened up my mind so much as an artist. Like, I studied craft really hard at Sheridan. That was a really difficult program that, like, almost murdered me. But I don't regret learning any of it. And I love being able to put it through a filter of feminism and self-empowerment and bring it to these kids. Because not all of them, like, not all of them are going to be, like, banging singers, you know what I mean? But I still want them to be able to sing. Not every banging singer is what I want to listen to on repeat. Like, I want to listen to The Raincoats. I want to listen to, like, Lou Reed. I want to listen to Morrissey. I mean, I want to listen to, like, something that's so real.
That was part one of Mira Govindasamy's interview with Kriti Uranowski, Toronto musician and volunteer with Girls Rock Camp. We'll hear the rest of that interview right after this quick break.
Hey, this is Peaches, and you're listening to me on FEM Radio, CJRU 1280, Sculp at Ryerson.
There's all this self-esteem stuff going on, and it's, I think it's important that the program is so great at building up kids' self-esteem. Is there ever any value in, like, grounding kids to what, where they stand in relation to the showbiz?
It's just not a thing. It's like, it is a thing, 100%. Obviously, it's a thing. Like, the world is a thing. But in my books, it's not a thing anymore. And it's not a thing that's ever measured cool. And it's just, like, the commodification. And, like, if you can't sell something from it, then it's not considered mainstream cool. Because the mainstream is the bank. Good art isn't always cool. And cool art isn't always good. We try to touch on a lot of history. Casey, who's an incredible educator, she's from the band Obijou. She does a workshop about women in music, the history of women in music, and she shows this big collage, and it's all men and the kids. Like, so even the, like, the littlest ones, they get so riled up. And then she goes through the history of women in music, and then the kids, like, totally are like, yeah, like, that collage is, like, bull. Like we need our own collage.
Do they get to light it on fire at the end?
Actually, well, we try and go a little more constructive. They draw pictures of their favorite musicians.
What kind of pictures do you see?
There's a lot of Katy Perry and Taylor Swift fans. Some people will, like, suck up and say one of the counselors. But, I mean, there's a lot of counselors who are in cool bands.
What do you think about, like, when kids draw Katy Perry or they draw Taylor Swift? Is that a good thing necessarily all the time, or?
You know what? It's.
I'm coming in with my own strong bias against Taylor Swift. I'll just say it.
It depends on why the kid likes it, what the kid likes about it. And you can really only get deep into that on one-on-one. But, like, I've had little kids who are just like, oh, I love Taylor Swift. She's so beautiful. Like, I want her to be my girlfriend. She's so cute. And they, like, stare at her just like you would stare at a cute boy. And I love that. A thing that I do sometimes to trick students into listening to other music is to go to MTV is actually quite a good website where they have a list of, like, the artist, and then they connect the artist with their influences and other similar artists. So I like to be like, well, let's see what Taylor Swift listened to when she was your age, which would have been in this year. And so she probably listened to this song. Do you want to, like, check out this song? Or, like, I've, like, tricked kids into learning stuff, being like, what are Harry Styles' favorite bands? And then I'm like, why don't we learn a song just in case you ever meet him and want to, like, and he's, like, just playing the guitar and you, like, want to sing a song. I bet he'll like this, like, Oasis song. Anyway, I just don't like traditional teaching, and I only, like, I like to teach one-on-one generally. I love teaching at rock camp groups, but I don't like teaching at schools. I just like doing my own thing and teaching students who want to learn, mainly students who want to learn songwriting is what I do, but also some, like, just voice-only students.
Thinking about rock bands, they're kind of notorious for a lot of band drama, big egos. Does that happen at camp? What's it like with kids?
I will say, I manage a band of girls from Girls Rock Camp called Hex, and they are 16. They started when they were 13, 14, and they're great, and they're doing really well right now. And they've been getting some great shows because they are part of Girls Rock Camp, and a lot of people will do fundraisers and for Girls Rock Camp, and they'll get a great show, and they'll often get an honorarium or something like that, and they have a show coming up, and they called me, and they were like, there's no guarantee. We have to go on first, and it's a long weekend. Like, I'm not doing this show, and the show's in 2 days, just so you know. One of them called, and I was like, who on earth do you think you are? I literally cannot believe, I swore, but I was like, I literally cannot believe this. Who do you think you are? Put down this phone immediately and keep practicing.
I'm getting such mother vibes from you right now. You got, Kriti has curlers in her hair, just like sticking out from under.
I was, so I know they were joking around. Like, this is one of the girls in the band, loves to be the drama. Simran, what up? Shout out to Simran, because I'll make you listen to this. But she, no, she's the best. She's our resident Kardashian. She just bleached her hair blonde, and it's wild. It looks great. But anyway, as they were hanging up the phone, Helene, the lead singer, was like, you deserve that. And then they hung up. But then I called them back in 2 seconds. I'm like, hey. I'm like, was that like, do you legitimately have concerns about the show? Or were you just calling and complaining for fun? And she was like, I was calling and complaining for fun. Like,
so they're coming to the show.
I'm like, this is an excellent show. I'm like, you are playing with bands that are, that sound like you, not just a lineup of all women, which I love a lineup of all women, but also, like, just women should be in every show. I don't pay attention to any band that does not have one woman, one person of color, or one, like, queer person in it. I just don't have time. There's a few like male artists that are performing right now that I do like, but I feel like they have a really unique perspective on misandry and misogyny, and are saying some quite interesting things.
I guess you must instruct boys then too in your private lessons.
I do.
What kind of differences have you noted?
Really not much. Sometimes a little more. It really depends on the kid. Yeah, you know, like, it's like vocally, sometimes it's difficult in the developing years for boys as their voices change. So I've really been specifying working with young men as their voices change. I also have been really into working with people who are transitioning gender vocally, because I think that's, like, so fascinating. And I know for some of my transgendered friends, it's a really, really dysmorphic thing, and it's very difficult for them. So whatever control I can help them have over their voice, or have a safe place to, like, just, like, get some kinks out of the vocal cords, get some dust off of there, I'd love to provide, because I just have some friends who were amazing singers in the gender they were born as, and are still really, really cool vocalists in the gender they've transitioned to. And it's cool to be a part of that journey with them. Like, however they are approaching it, it's always different across the board.
The girls in Hex are so lucky to have a cool mom like you.
Oh my gosh. I know, somebody asked me at the Long Winter show, they were like, are you their mom? Are you her mom? And I was like, they're all my daughters. They're fraternal triplets.
They're fraternal triplets.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure, you know what? No, they are lucky, though.
They just look really different, so it's funny.
No, that's great. Yeah, do you want to talk a bit more about Hex? Like, what are they? they up to? Yeah. So they're playing shows. They're doing well.
They are. Hex are doing pretty great. Yeah, they're playing as many shows as they can. It takes a little bit more to develop, just a little bit more time than I think if they weren't in school and like having lives. I don't want to take that experience away from them because otherwise they won't really have anything to write about. But yeah, so they've been playing a lot of shows. They just finished their first record. We're just like mixing and mastering it currently. It's called Miss Pristine. It's 10 songs and they recorded it in 10 hours live off the floor. And it's pretty amazing sounding.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's wild. They're like super talented. They're just a really tight three-piece band. Two guitars and drums. It's got a lot of like, kind of like a Ramones vibe. They really love the Velvet Underground and Dylan. They really, Helena's voice, I'd say, it's very, very, a lot of people compare her to Patti Smith vocally. She's a really interesting young vocalist, like Helena, the front person. And then Simran, the Trouble Kardashian. She also plays guitar, but plays a lot of the bass parts through a guitar amp with different pedals. And then Kyria, the drummer, she's pretty solid. They've all been in bands together for years through Girls Rock Camp, and Hex is the one that stuck. They did the Girls Rock Camp. We did an after-school program, and they met there. They had a different band coach, actually, a woman named Oriana Barbato, who's an amazing bassist in a band called the Santerias, and another band with her partner called Rock Attack. She's really, really cool. They make really cool music. Her partner plays the tabla. You should check them out. They're really, really, really cool. But anyway, Oriana was coaching them, and then I was teaching Simran separately, and then we had a couple sessions with her, and then she's like a session musician and so busy, so she kind of passed the torch along to me. But yeah, I've been working with them ever since.
Working with them, so they're out of Girls Rock Camp now. You're working as their manager. So how have you and also with the girls of Hex decided to manage their relationship to age and gender, considering they're coming out of Girls Rock Camp, which obviously has kind of a focus on, you know, what their age is and their gender?
I mean, like, there's always going to be people who are, like, not creative writers, and that's what they choose to focus on, and that's totally cool. I love to search out, like, unique voices in journalism, which is the responsibility, I guess, of management and of artists to seek out unique platforms of people who will talk to you about something other than your age or your gender. 'Cause, you know, that's cool for a second, but, you know, especially if it's coming from a condescending place, which a lot of people can come from, you know, people, teachers, performers often will give younger performers feedback from a place of jealousy or a place of bitterness. And that often can warp young performers' perspective. I know that definitely happened to me. And I try desperately for that not to happen to Hex.
Also, in terms of diversity, I know that there is some discussion within Girls Rock Camp about Indigenous issues in Canada with the girls. I'm wondering what goes on there.
For sure. I love that Magalie, one of the co-directors, always, as soon as like we're kind of introducing on the first day, she just brings to the table to acknowledge that we're on Indigenous land. She discusses in depth what that means to the campers, and often we'll be lucky enough to have an Indigenous music representative from the Indigenous music community come in. Often it's a woman named Veronica Johnny, who is the lead singer of a really cool Indigenous Canadian rock band called the Johnnies, and they're really badass. They really slay. Like, they have a really cool like classic rock sound, really like good vibe. She's an amazing front woman. Plus, their songs are about Indigenous issues. They actually recorded a song called What If It Was Your Girl, which is about missing and murdered Indigenous women and the Highway of Tears. And they had the Girls Rock Camp girls sing on the recording, like a choir on the song. It's amazing. Like, it sounds so great. And I love the song. Anyhow, Veronica often will come and do like a morning greeting circle and we'll burn some sweet grass and bless everyone. Sometimes we'll sing, sometimes we'll chant, sometimes we'll do drum songs. My group at Girls Rock Camp over March break loved the Indigenous music, the Indigenous drumming workshop that we had so much because the songs were so pastorally focused on, like, and they love the concept of magic and nature as opposed to writing songs about boys and love, which is often presented to them. They didn't even bring that up, but I kind of was like, yeah, like, I often will get really bored of being like, I love you, why don't you want to hold my hand? And sometimes I want to write about, like, my rocks. And so I actually, my band was so sweet. Their name was called Moon Spades. And they wrote a song about, we did like a bunch of creative writing exercises and distilled everyone's lyrics, but it ended up being about like buying moon dust at the store. And like, they took like Indigenous melody. These are all kids from New Families to Canada. Actually, we do the March Break workshop is, the March Break camp is from Dixon Hall, which is different from our usual venue. And that is a music school for the community in Regent Park, which is often new families to Toronto. So anyway, it was really cool seeing those kids being like so into Indigenous Canadian stuff and then calling their band Moonspades, and like their melody was like da 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 da, which is accessible to them. It's simple. It's just a chord. And they're very, these kids have taken music lessons all year, so they're really advanced in theory, and they really love the concept of it. And then, like, the images they brought into, like, the chorus was, like, when the flowers sleep, when the pollen flows, when the earth sways and the willow blows, was the chorus of the song. And it was, like, so good. I loved them so much. And then, like, the guitar is, like, really, like, dirty sounding, like it was like really like 90s rock grunge, but they had like such a twinkly keyboard riff, so it's like it sounds so cool. It penetrates so deeply, like the concepts and the ideas and the importance of it to the kids, because they don't have that predisposed adult thing to be like, when you acknowledge the importance, a lot of adults will also have a difficult time acknowledging responsibility and what their responsibility is as a Canadian citizen now, especially coming up with the 150th anniversary, which is such a...
Well, I'll just breathe a good sigh.
A whole other podcast. A whole other podcast. I just hope they're not wasting a bunch of money on that while they're not helping the Indigenous communities. You hear that? You hear that? Government? Political! sorry, I just stole a Kimmy Schmidt joke.
I didn't even notice.
It's okay. It's from Vivian Carol Kane. Anyway, I love that it has brought the campers closer to the community. It's brought the whole community closer to and learning more about Indigenous issues. It's great. It's great when kids respect the land, when kids respect, period. Because that's kind of the problem right now, right? It's like Lie Factory, the world. It's like Mad Lies, and everyone's like, I don't care. I don't care. I gotta get mine! Like, that's like, everybody's like, just like really freaking out right now. And so, like, to teach kids respect and care and how to be that cool, like, I'm my own thing. But also, like, acknowledge everyone around you is also their own thing. Like, so how are we going to be our own things together? And maximize our own thingness.
Thank you for chatting on Fem Radio today.
Thank you for having me. I had a good time.
It's been lovely, Critty. I've learned a lot about being my own thing today.
Aw, thanks, Mira. You are your own thing.
Let's talk about a few things we are digging this week. So this is stuff in our lives or in pop culture that we are really digging and we want to share with you. Sam.
Yeah.
What are you digging this week?
I actually have a gripe. Is that okay?
Yes, we do allow gripes.
We do allow gripes.
Definitely welcome.
Okay. Actually, you know what? My one thing that I do dig is that I've learned how to make like freshly baked bread. And I just, like, I just put it into the oven today. And
Emily is, like, yeah. the biggest bread maker
really?
Fan.
I bake a lot of bread.
Really?
It's, like, my newfound, I started, like, last year.
Okay.
It's, like, my hobby.
It's so easy.
It's so easy. And, but also, like, it can be so hard.
It takes way more time than you think it's going to.
Yeah, yes.
Ah, yeah. So that's my digging.
No, bread is very fun to bake and very rewarding and healthier for you than yes. store-bought bread. And
100%. Okay. We can please. All find common ground on this subject. I'll bring in some next week. My gripe is far from bread. Cosmo recently published an article titled How This Woman Lost 44 Pounds Without Any Exercise. And that's super clickbaity to begin with. And then you read it and you actually find out that she lost weight because she was diagnosed with a severe kidney infection before testing positive for cancer. So that's icky. This woman also had a partial lung collapse, PTSD, and a damaged disc in her back. The article goes on to shift a focus onto weight loss that included a diet called the BOD. And while the article didn't directly say that she, like, cancer helped her lose weight, the headline pretty much makes it sound like she did. And people are really angry about it, including myself, because mm-hmm. that is just terrible. You think Cosmo would learn or yeah. do better?
Well, it just reflects this culture of prizing weight loss over health.
Yes.
And above all else, right? So even just like the way that people will comment on other people's bodies and yes. say, oh, you've lost weight, congratulations. Ugh. It's like, well, no, actually, you don't know what that person.
No, exactly.
It could be a mental health thing that they're going through 100%. That prevents them from eating. It could be other health issues that
yeah.
have been causing them to lose weight. It's like being a lower weight is not an indicator of health.
No. I had a gallbladder surgery a couple years ago, and I lost a bunch of weight because I couldn't eat really high-fat foods. And then after I had the surgery, people are like, oh, you look so great. I'm like, I literally just went through a surgery, and yeah. you're complimenting me on something that, like, shouldn't matter to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's icky. It's really icky. That's my gripe.
Yeah, we should. I have been kind of a petitioner for having FM radio gripes.
Ooh.
But, yeah. you know, we've been kind of like working it into our diggings.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a dig in the side, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
In the side.
It's a born.
Yeah, I feel like that works both ways.
yeah. I'm usually trying to be positive, but then I saw that and I was like, oh, I can't. I can't be positive on this one.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
Yeah. I feel like if we had a specific gripe section, we could just, the whole show would be gripes.
Yeah.
we should have like a gripe special, just like web gripes.
Ooh, a 1 hour yeah. gripe episode.
Yeah.
I'll bring in bread.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. We'll eat bread on air.
That's the best thing. Just carbs and gripes.
Carbs and, that's what we'll call the episode, carbs and gripes.
And on the note of your gripe,
yes,
can we start complimenting each other like, you look beast today?
Yeah.
Something like that. I think that's the best compliment I've
beast.
Gotten lately. And
beast.
I was like, whoa, thank you.
That's a good compliment.
Who told you that?
Someone in my program, shout out Calm Cultures. You have some good
nice.
Compliments.
You look beast today.
You look beast today. And then, but it was quickly followed by, I don't mean that in a bad way.
yeah.
Which I knew they didn't.
Yeah.
But I get that some people would take that.
We
a
should
bad
put
way.
That into the mainstream.
Yeah. yeah. Stacey, what are you digging this week?
So this week I am digging a both hilarious and insightful article in the Atlantic this month titled The Patriarchy Hates the Moon. They Even Tried to Nuke It, written by Sam Chris. So they start with a short recollection on loathing the moon, and then they move on to outline a series of vendettas and a history of fear and distrust against the moon throughout human history. From secret Cold War plans to conduct nuclear tests on the moon in 1958, to its history of anti-Catholic ties, we can think of witchcraft, and of course its very feminine power and ties to moon cycles. A favorite connection and obvious one is the term lunatic that comes up, and of course derived from the Latin luna. It is said that the Romans believed madness to take place under some sort of lunar spell. So we can also think of vampires and werewolves. I mean, it certainly says something that we still use the word lunatic today. Some of the opinion used in this piece is a bit left of what can be deemed maybe 100% unbiased or completely factual. A little bit clickbaity, but hey, you know, it's certainly an entertaining read. And at the bottom of the article, if you feel you haven't quite got your fill of moon magic, there's also a 15-minute video by filmmaker Asheris Brooker titled, Why Does the Moon Fascinate Us? So this title is overall a very entertaining and thoughtful read on our silver mother in the sky. So check it out. It's over at theatlantic.com. It is titled The Patriarchy Hates the Moon. They even tried to nuke it. Written by Sam Chris.
This week, I am digging CBC's Anne series, the latest iteration of the Anne of Green Gables story. The CBC the new series stars Amy Beth McNulty as Anne Shirley, Geraldine James as Marilla Cuthbert, and R.H. Thompson as Matthew Cuthbert. So I grew up reading the books with my mom and watching the television miniseries that came out in the 80s that my mom had copied onto VHS tapes straight from TV. Not only was it something I shared with my mom and my sister, but I felt a connection with the character of Anne. I think what I found special about her story, both when I was young and now, is that it was one of the only stories I had at the time that centered the emotional life of a young girl and dealt explicitly in female friendships. It's the story of a young girl who finds family and community, but she's also kind of a hot mess sometimes. She struggles with and finally embraces